is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, traveling the world because the adversaries of China and Russia. Right now we're focusing on China because there's news. This is ABC reporting within these hours. Since the beginning of October, Beijing has sent more than 150 military aircraft into Taiwan's air defense zone in an attempt to intimidate the Taiwanese government. In recent days, the People's Liberation Army, PLA, sworn to devote all of its energies to the General Secretary, Xi Jinping, also mounted large amphibious landing drills on the mainland side of the Taiwan Straits, an unambiguous show of force, writes ABC, and a sign of escalating tensions in the region. Taiwan's defense minister warned the Taiwanese legislature earlier in this month that Beijing might be able to launch a full-scale invasion by 2025. Mary, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Taiwan is the challenge for the U.S. and Asia. First, I want to understand the scale of this challenge. Nothing is new here. Taiwan has been an independent capitalist state for decades. It is exceedingly integrated into the success of the Chinese miracle because the courts in Taiwan, the investment class in Taiwan, and the comfort level of investors from outside the region have gone through Taipei into Beijing, Shanghai, and the other development of these last decades. You're very familiar with Taipei. I recall once upon a time while you were on a windy street talking to you in Taipei because you'd gone there for the Wall Street Journal to do interviews. So is there something new here, Mary? Is the military aircraft and the landings on the mainland side and the U.S. sending warships through the Taiwan Strait, is that a turn of the page? Or just because the reporting now is focusing on it, it seems scary? Good evening to you, Mary.
Great to be with you, John. Communist China has been threatening the democratic people of Taiwan for many, many decades. So the existence of the threat is not new. What is new is the aggressive nature of the rhetoric and the tempo of these overflights and other military activities that represent overt threats to the island and to our friends there. That's what's new.
The concern in the United States with the new administration is what is to be done given these threats. I read from the ACN Post by Richard Haass. This is an op-ed piece published within these last days. Richard Haass is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations and regarded as a very calm voice in a world of turbulence. He writes that U.S.-China relations have deteriorated sharply in recent years, but not because of Taiwan. He goes on to say that Taiwan is critical for the U.S. alliances in Asia. He writes, allowing China to coerce or absorb Taiwan would undermine or even end the U.S. alliance system in Asia. Governments would either be inclined to defer to China, an Asian version of Finlandization, or become more autonomous, which could lead to conventional military and even nuclear proliferation. Mary, is that something you observe now in the Biden administration, a concern? And was that a concern your time at state in 2020, that losing Taiwan means losing all the relationships of Asia?
Well, there's another option, which is that the free nations of Asia and friends of free nations in Asia would bandwagon together and pull together to contain or to even push back against any such aggressive move by communist China. So it's always perilous, John, to predict the future. No one can really do it. But the reason that Mr. Haass is concerned about the defense of Taiwan, as we are, is because it represents the first island chain, and it is key to U.S. deterrence in Asia Pacific. If we did not come to Taiwan's defense, or if Japan did not help, or if Australia did not help, then what to make of the security of the Philippines, or of Japan, or Southeast Asian nations, or the island nations in the Pacific? You start to see the real erosion of U.S. Hegemony in the region, of the protection that we give to international trade through those crucial waterways, through which a third of global trade traverses. It becomes a very, very serious situation very quickly. But, John, it's important to add, these overflights and threats to one of the world's most vibrant democracies isn't really necessary. There are a million Taiwanese working in mainland China. If you talk to government officials or business leaders, they'll be very frank with you. They'll say, look, we're not that far away from the mainland. We desire peaceful ties. Our economy is small compared to the mainland. So if Xi Jinping were, I think, savvier, he would extend a hand to Taiwan and say, don't worry, just trade with us and get rich with us. He'd use, in effect, the same technique that he's used with the West. I'd just refer everybody to recent comments by the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. It's a case in point. He was asked point blank, what is Britain's relationship with China? And he effectively said, well, it's really terrible, that genocide in Xinjiang and, crimes against humanity. And that's really awful and terrible what they did in Hong Kong. But, they're kind of a big trading partner. So therefore, we just got to be nice to them. That's the kind of hedging and lack of a moral center that China wants to cultivate. And they could do the same with Taiwan. They're just choosing not to. And as a result, the United States is rallying our allies together in the region. And that's a positive development, but it's a direct result of the actions of China.
The puzzle then, Mary, for America to understand, for our listeners to understand this quandary. Why does Xi Jinping make threats against Taiwan? Why does he say again and again, and I believe him, I don't think it's false witness, that Taiwan is our 10th province and must be reunited with the mainland? What is in it for him, given all the advantages he now enjoys without the conflict?
Well, he has aspirations to be a transformational leader like Mao Zedong. He hasn't been subtle about that. It could also be a way for him to deflect attention away from the deteriorating economic situation within China. Beijing has not handled the Wuhan virus very well. Not only did the country birth this pandemic, but they spread it not just throughout China, but throughout the world. And then they instituted a lockdown policy and goodness knows what else that has not been particularly successful. Their vaccine didn't really work. Their property sector is imploding. For all we know, they could have demonstrations and protests across the country. It's hard for us to tell because our journalists and our diplomats and our academics cannot travel freely around the country. But there was a story on CNN recently, I would also commend to your listeners, about a man who killed a couple of people because in a land dispute, because basically he couldn't get permission to build a home for himself. And he was actually received with quite a lot of sympathy among the mainland population because he clearly was a victim of justice and then he turned into a criminal himself. This is a society with deep, deep, deep problems, an enormous amount of misery and division and discontent. And so, threatening to take over Taiwan is a convenient way to rally the nationalist instinct and to focus attention elsewhere.
Let me give an example of another way our allies are accommodating themselves to brutality. This has to do with Russia. The headline from the London Times, Russia freezes out NATO in payback for spy expulsions. Mr. Lavrov, the foreign minister of the Russian Federation, you know very well, is speaking in behest of his president, Mr. Putin. Russia has said it is freezing ties with NATO after relations between the two plunged to a new low over a spying row. Rather than pursue the details, I mention in general that all of Europe now is beseeching Russia to maintain or increase its supply of natural gas for the winter. All of Europe is accommodating itself to the Russian depredations of these last years, the sanctions in place, and yet please keep the natural gas flowing, and when does Nord Stream 2 light up? So aren't we using the same model with China that we're using with Russia? When I say we, I mean the U.S. is allied with European states, and therefore do we not go along with them to think with, I mean, I guess we're two-faced. That would be the old-fashioned way of saying it.
Yes, it's always easier for a political leader to accommodate and to appease than to confront very complex, often gray zone questions. And so is it easy for political leaders of the free nations of Europe to stand up and say to their citizenries, actually, clean energy is really nuclear energy. And natural gas, and we have clean coal technology. And by the way, we have an awful lot of these resources, and we need to use them because we need to secure our energy supplies. It's an issue not just of economic growth, but it's an issue of national sovereignty and national security. That's hard to do when the political left in many European countries, and I'd also include Britain in this, are dead set against any kind of carbon emission and carbon-based fuel. No, it's a hard thing to do. You might risk your political career on it. It's the right thing to do. But, you know, you don't see Boris Johnson coming out and saying that he's going to be the cutter of fracking. You see him coming out and saying, we're going to be the cutter of hydrogen. It's absurd. And so canny autocrats like Vladimir Putin and others take full advantage of this. And they say, well, you've opened a door for me. I'm going to walk through the door and I'm going to stand in your house and I'm going to tell you when you can turn your lights on and when you can't, and whether or not you'll have fuel or you can't. And you couple this with the United States also voting in the leadership that is anti-fracking and anti-coal, that doesn't want to drill in far off places like Alaska, in the remotest of areas where nobody goes. And you get a situation where we are hostage, to the whims of our enemies. And, this is entirely avoidable, but it all comes back to decisions, John, decisions of men and women in leadership who we've elected to put there, and whether or not they have the courage to do what's right or not.
I'm speaking with Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated. She's former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. When we come back, the problem is before us. What happens if Taiwan and the defense no longer rhetoric but actions? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.